the beautiful music of Al Lockett, Friends We Meet Along the Way. And if that music was playing, then this must be Wednesday. And if it's Wednesday, this must be the No Show. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan. Good evening and welcome to your No Show, the Blog Talk radio program on the Renford Broadcast Radio Network that addresses New Thought Metaphysics, which simply means a new way of thinking as we move beyond the physical and discuss the metaphysical aspects of spiritual intervention that incorporates the wisdom of yesterday with the technology of today and allows us to bridge the gap and circumnavigate the spiritual highways of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It is our pleasure to serve as your host and to invite spirit-filled people to share with us how it is that they are showing up in the world, how they are making a difference in their neighborhood mosques, temples, churches, synagogues, and even the neighborhood 7-Elevens, and then taking that to their states, countries, and ultimately the world. My guest this evening is doing just that and then some. Thank you very much. My guest is Peter Woodbury, MSW. He received his undergraduate degree in psychology from Harvard University, and his master's degree from Boston University. He trained in hypnotherapy and past life regression techniques with Dr. Brian Weiss, Dr. Alan Chips, and Dan Brown, Ph.D. Peter is in private practice as a psychotherapist and a hypnotherapist in Virginia Beach, with a focus on the use of spirituality and faith as tools for personal transformation and liberation. A student of the Edgar Cayce readings for over 20 years, he is a popular presenter on key topics from the Cayce readings, both at ARE headquarters and in the field. Fluent in three languages, yes, I said in three languages, he is also known for his outstanding leadership of ARE Tours, that's the Association for Research and Enlightenment Tours to South America, India, and Egypt. He also finds time somehow to play Edgar Cayce in the popular one-man show titled An Evening with Edgar Cayce. And we are going to hear a little bit excerpts from some of those experiences where this talented gentleman, Peter Woodbury, does in fact play the part of Mr. Cayce, and I have no doubt that Mr. Cayce is showing up within him to direct him in terms of what to do, when to say it, what to say to the people in order that they might get what it is that they need to get. I want to share this with you right quickly right now. In order to contact Peter directly via email or telephone, you may write Peter at peter.woodbury at edgarcayce.org. That's at edgarcayce.org. And he will respond to you. He would be happy to get back with you and share this phenomenal opportunity of knowing more about ARE, knowing more about this phenomenal work that goes on there in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Peter, good evening and welcome to the No Show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are so pleased to have you here. I have to share with you that ARE is one of my favorite places. I read The Sleeping Prophet by Jess Stern many years ago, and it was one of the first books that I read after my family transitioned, and I was trying to understand what it is about life after life, because it didn't seem to me that it ended at that point. It seemed to me that there was much, much more to it than just that. But yet, my traditional upbringing and the churches that I was in, my granny sent me to Catholic school, but she was Baptist. And then the church that I happened to be a part of was Church of God in Christ. So all of those folks were saying different things, and it seemed to me that none of them was saying exactly what it was that I wanted to hear. So let's hear it from you in your own words, how you got started in this work, and if you would, share with the folks what ARE is all about, what the types of things that go on there that happen, in that wonderful space right there in Virginia Beach, Virginia, on the ocean. Tell us about it.
Sure. Well, I think that my interest in metaphysics started with my great-grandmother. She outlived my own grandmother. She was my mother's grandmother, and she lived to be 107. And so she she was probably about 100 when I was born. And she was, you would say, was a medium. And so I remember going to visit her, and, you know, if I sat down, sometimes she'd say, oh, you know, your uncle's sitting there, and I couldn't see anybody. And so, you know, as a child, I was curious, you know, did she have imaginary friends? And so I told my parents about it, and they were neutral about it. But you know, they didn't try to talk me out of it or think it was evil or any kind of religious negative perspective. And so it was a nice environment for me to be curious about extrasensory perception. And so I read anything I could. You know, my parents were both psychiatrists, and they were both Catholics, so those were important elements in my life. But I was able to, on the side, as a hobby, explore and read about you know, what was happening in the world of ESP and mediumship and things like that. And then when I was in college, my uncle asked me about if I'd heard of Edgar Cayce, because he knew I was studying psychology. And I told him I'd never heard of Edgar Cayce, and he looked at me like I was studying physics and had never heard of Einstein. So I quickly went to the bookstore and picked up some books about Edgar Cayce, and I realized he was from that kind of metaphysical branch, you know, influence of my family. And so I was interested in it, but put it aside for my studies. And then after graduate school, I went to hear a series of lectures by a well-known theologian and psychologist named Harmon Breaux. And unbeknownst to me, Harmon had lived with, he and his wife had lived with the Cayces for about a year. And so he was present for hundreds of readings, and he spoke about this experience, and he was both very credible and also reminded me of my uncle and what he had told me about Edgar Cayce. So I picked up the biography of Edgar Cayce, the only one that's been written in his lifetime, There Is a River. And that just like you were saying earlier, it just resonated with me. Like, for you, it was The Sleeping Prophet. For me, it was There Is a River. I really found a home for all these disparate beliefs I had kind of come to see. And with him, it felt like there was a unification. Like, I think that he's known for most of his readings were on medical issues, you know, helping people get well. But I think he also had a big role to play in broadening our perspective about God. And, like, I would call it almost a holistic theology. Came through, you know, putting credence in a lot of the different concepts that are segregated into the religions. Meaning he talked about Jesus, but he also talked about reincarnation, and he talked about, you know, Kundalini and Akashic records. He just kind of spoke about God in broad terms without feeling it necessary to speak within one religious tradition. And so those all resonated with me. And when I read There Is a River, I was happy to see that I wasn't reading about a historical organization, that the association that he started, the ARE, or the Association for Research and Enlightenment, still existed. So I sent in the postcard, and I joined the organization, and I started getting involved in Boston, where I lived at the time, and began coming down to the ARE for conferences and workshops, and I started doing their travel, because they do spiritually-based travel around the world. And after, I don't know how many years, 12 years of kind of coming back and forth, I decided about 10 years ago, before that, I decided to move to Virginia Beach, and 10 years ago I moved here. And have been part of the organization. So it's a membership-based organization. It has about 30,000 members internationally, around the country, around the world. And it's kind of a metaphysical center. Twice a month they'll have a conference, and some of the luminaries or some of the new folks that are doing research and exploring kind of the subjects Edgar Cayce spoke about. Those workshops go on here. There's also an affiliated university called Atlantic University, where you can get a master's degree in holistic kind of psychological, similar to the, what Edgar Cayce spoke about, but perhaps more in a more contemporary context. And there's also a prison outreach program. There's a massage school. There's a spa on the grounds. We have a publishing house. We have two different presses. We have a ARE Press, which puts out Edgar Cayce-focused books, and then there's Fourth Dimension Press, which is a broader metaphysical press. What else do they do there? We have a magazine that's part of the membership magazine. Yes,
I think one of the really critical things that is done there also is the fact that people are able to come there and do research on various challenges, health-wise or any otherwise that they might have. And Mr. Cayce would do these readings for them and would share information. I remember one time when I was concerned about going bald. Well, people who know me now will laugh at that assertion, because guess what? It continued to happen. And guess what? I decided that I really didn't care, especially after I heard Mr. Cayce say that, well, brains and hair don't necessarily grow together. So I was pleased to know that. So there are all types of suggestions as well for using things that you could get. As a matter of fact, one of those at one point was crude oil for a challenge that a person was having. So, ladies and gentlemen, you really want to give some serious consideration to looking up ARE, going up online and seeing all of the wonderful things that are there. And I can assure you that going there for a visit for 3 or 4 or 5 days is going to be well worth your while. You know, as you were talking, Peter, I heard a couple of things, and let me just remind all of the folks that are online with us that if you'd like to, you may ask a question in the chat room, and I will see that and will share it, or you may call in and press 1. Call in to 347-838-9142. Press 1. And that will alert us to know that you are, in fact, in tow and would like to ask a question, and we will bring you into the conversation. But unless you press 1, we won't know to do that. So please remember that as you're dialing in to then ask your question. It seemed to me, Peter Woodbury, that you were being prepared all the time for what it is that you were doing. And I wonder if you, I know that you feel that way now, but did you at any time during all of these things that were happening and all of the folks that had been wonderfully brought into your experience to shepherd you in this direction, did you feel that then?
Now that I look back, I see the thread, you know. But as I was walking through it, you know, it was a little bit, there was a lot of kind of faith and kind of just following my nose kind of where I was interested. And, there were lots of sidesteps that I took that have since, you know, like for a while after college, I wanted to just explore my art and creativity. So I did theater for a couple years. And then I set that aside. Then when I came here, it was the 75th anniversary, and since I had a background in theater, they put me to work, and I ended up portraying Edgar Cayce. I did a performance that has since become quite popular. So it's just, you know, sometimes even the little sidesteps that you never think are going to, you know, you don't know where they're going to take you, but it's still part of me. So it's very true that all these little parts of, I feel very, very fulfilled. Like I'm really living my life's purpose.
And you are, because based upon all of the comments that I've heard from friends all over the country relative to how it is that people are responding to your sharing the Casey story and sharing it in the wonderful way that you do. And we're going to hear a little bit of that in just a few minutes, because Peter was kind enough to send us a piece that we have been able to upload, and we're going to play a little bit of that as and I can't tell you what part I'm going to play right now, Peter, but after we have done that, then you can, for a few minutes, you can then come back and tell us what it was all about. But set it up for people in terms of how it is that you start this one-man show, and you are portraying Edgar Casey, and you're starting back when Mr. Casey was just getting started with all of this stuff, and he, at that time, was heavily involved in Christianity, it's my understanding. And yeah. And so set that up for us. How is that, and what is it that we'll hear with these few minutes of the Edgar Casey story that we're going to hear you portraying?
Well, the way that I the performance is staged around Edgar Casey manifesting in current time, and so he's you know, he's in his body mind that he left, or you know, or took with him, however you want to think of it, when he passed away in 1945, coming back to reflect with his friends. And so mm-hmm. the first act is basically he recounts the story of his life from his birth and through all of the unusual experiences to his losing his voice and giving readings and then wishing he could start a hospital and then moving to Virginia Beach and eventually not working out and then founding the Association for Research and Enlightenment and then his passing on in 1945. And then there's a question and answer period, and then he goes on to talk about the times that we live in that he talked about, this new age. And mm-hmm. then Mr. Casey reflects upon his reading and explains how those influences are playing out in current time.
Mm. Interesting. Fascinating. All right, ladies and gentlemen, once again, this is The No Show. My name is Robert J.V. McMillan, and we are visiting with Peter Woodbury, who is an associate and affiliated with the Association for Research and Enlightenment, the Edgar Casey Organization in Virginia Beach, Virginia. In a few moments, we are going to hear what that sounds like and how it is that all of that started as we listen to Peter Woodbury playing the role of the one-man show here of Edgar Casey back during that period of time. So I'm going to put all of us on hold for just a moment, and we're going to let you hear that and see what a little bit
Welcome
of that
for the person that started
all
it all,
about.
Mr. Edgar Casey.
Good evening, and thank you very much for coming out this evening to spend some time hearing from an old fella like myself. Maybe have some stories to share with y'all. Now, this is I am Edgar Casey, and this is titled An Evening with Edgar Casey. That's what y'all are here for, right? The reason I say that is last time I gave a talk, a woman in the front row said, Edgar Casey, I thought this was an evening with Spencer Tracy. And she was might upset that Mr. Tracy was not here. It was myself. So I am so happy to see all of you here and that you're part of this conference here. When we founded this organization back in 1931, that was our very hope, that we would have these sorts of occasions where folks of like mind or like heart, or maybe not so much like mind, maybe different minds and different opinions, would come together and share and speak their knowledge, speak their truths, and you know, one of the readings said there could be some discussing and sometimes some cussing, just over differences of opinions and that sort of thing. But our intention was always that this organization stand for growth, for spiritual growth, and that whatever happened here was for the betterment of the person who came. And so my hope is that the time that you have spent here, you've had some new ideas, some new thoughts, maybe reinforced some old ones, and maybe thought about some things in a different way, in a new way. And my hope for this evening is also to share with you some of my experience in my life. It's just my life, just my truth. And maybe it might have some relevance to you, maybe not. We'll have to see. So my hope for this evening is just to have a chance to talk with y'all and let you know a little bit about myself. Now, the conference that you've been hearing about, you've been talking a lot about the Master. You've been talking a lot about Jesus and about meditation and things like that. And I think sometimes, especially after someone's passed away, you can make them into heroes. You can make them bigger than they were. Like they never had a flaw, never had a fear or a doubt. And I'm here to dispel that. I want to share with you what really happened in my life. My life was full of fears and doubts. You know, I think sometimes an accomplishment in life is that you overcame a lot of obstacles. And I certainly did that. There was plenty of missteps, things I wish I hadn't done, but did them and had to deal with the consequences of them like we all do. And my thought for this evening is just to share with you some of the story of my life and leave some time for y'all to ask me some questions and then probably speak some more. And the way I tell time is I count to five. By the time I see five heads dropped over asleep, it's time for me to stop talking. So far we're not at one yet, but we might be soon. So does that sound like a good way to spend an evening? Just that sort of way. And let me see if I can see the time. Oh, we're just after 7 o'clock here. So where should I start? You know, where do you start with a life? Well, some of you might know my life story better than I do, so correct me if I forget something. But I was born on a farm near Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Anybody here from the South or from Kentucky area? One of you? Yeah, lots of other you won't admit it. Is that what's going on? No. Yeah, I was born on a farm. We were mostly tobacco farmers. We did sharecropping, whatever would sell. Remember, I started smoking cigarettes at a young age. We used to think it was a good thing, smoke cigarettes. And now y'all have learned a lot more about dangers of smoking. I picked up that habit and struggled with it my whole life. But I was born on a farm, and I think that was a wonderful setting for a child, especially a curious child like I was. We lived on the border of a forest, and I got to walk through that forest. I think I was 4 or 5 years old. You let your 4 or 5 year old children go walking through forests nowadays? No, not so much. Now, times have changed, haven't they? Sometimes you don't even know your neighbors. It's a bit different time than then. But then, wasn't anything to be worried about. I spent a lot of time in the forest, lots of time seeing nature. It was really very important to me. But soon I found out that I could see and experience things that my schoolmates did not see and experience. And so my nickname, which I did not take fondly of, I became called the Freak. I was always seeing and talking to people that nobody else could see. I'd see them just fine. A lot of them were very polite. They would run off before anybody else could come and before I could introduce them. And then I realized it's because I was the only one who could see them. I also could see, and my whole life could see just little nature spits, just the little fairies or I guess different people call them different things, leprechauns, things like that. I was always able to see the nature spirits. Quite interesting, fascinating. I remember one time my father was quite upset with me. He was upsetting me often. Well, he was quite upset with me one time, and there were these little I don't know what to call them, little nature spirits. They were mocking my father. They were right over his shoulder, imitating him. And I remember that was just making me laugh and making my father more irritated than anything. But unusual experiences were just a common part of my life. I remember, again, walking in that forest. one time I had an experience with an angel. I should backtrack. You see, since I was a child, the Bible was very important to me. You know, I began reading the Bible. That was the first book I ever picked up, probably the last book I ever picked up, maybe one of the only ones I ever studied. And I didn't know what was in this book, but I had a feeling that it was important. And I used to read that book at night with my mother. She'd read part, and I'd read part, and I learned how to read reading the Bible. And I didn't understand the stories. I didn't understand a lot of the language of this book, but I understood that it was important. And as I grew older, I built my foundation in that book, in the Bible. My Christian faith was my rock through many, many a storm. I had to turn to Scripture and to my personal relationship to Jesus, to Christ. And that got me through many, many a difficult time. And so I was very grateful and am very grateful for that support that I had. And at the age of about, I think I was probably about 8 or 9, I decided I wanted to read that Bible cover to cover one time for each year of my life. So I wanted to be, by the time I was 50, I had read the Bible 50 times. 60, I'd read it 60 times. And so I was 8 or 9, something like that, probably read it twice. And so I wanted to read it 7 more times so I could have read it, whether it was 8 or 9, that age. And so when it used to rain, I would go under shelter. There was just trees that formed like a canopy. And under there, I could read my Bible without the Bible getting wet. And one of the times I was reading the Bible there, an angel appeared to me. And she asked me what it is that I would like. And I told her I would like to be able to help people and be able to help, especially children. That was the first thing that came to my mind. I wanted to emulate the Master. I wanted to emulate Jesus and devote my life to helping others. And so that's the first thing that came to my mind. And I don't know if that played a part in my future or not, but later that week, or maybe even that day, you may know the story that my father was very upset about. I was never terribly good at school, never was a scholar, and far from that. So I had failed a spelling test. I had spelled cat with a K or something like that. And so he was quite upset with me and pushing me to do my spelling. And I asked my father, once I got tired, I said, "Daddy, can we just have a moment? Can I just give me a moment to rest, to pause?" And so he did, and I fell asleep on top of the spelling book. Now, when I woke up, I had a photographic memory of the entire book. So when we did the spelling, I not only could tell him how the word was spelled, I could tell him the page it was on, I could tell him the words that were after it and before it, and he was dumbfounded. Now, my father, I could give you a whole evening talking about my father. He is a character. He's called the Squire, was his nickname. And anything good that happened, he told everybody. Anything bad, he didn't tell anybody. But if there was something good, he could find everybody to tell. So this story about me being able to sleep on a book, he told everybody that. And, you know, my father was good at, you know, he told tall tales, so not everybody believed everything he said. But this story made its way to a state senator. And this state senator didn't believe that a 9-year-old boy could sleep on something and memorize it. And so he had me sleep on a speech of this state senator. And I went to the senator's office and gave the entire speech to the senator. And that made the newspaper. You know, there wasn't much news going on around Hopkinsville, and so that made newspaper. So I just share that. So, you know, I'm not telling a tale, just not telling a story. That was actually something that actually happened and was validated by a newspaper article. And so these sorts of things, you know, it was I could also learn, I could pick up people's thoughts, what somebody thought. When they were around me, I could pick up as if it was spoken. And I was always able to see colors around people. Always able to see just different colors and lights around folks. You all now call that the aura. The aura is this energy field that's around people. I was always able to see it. And I came to understand the colors, what the colors meant. I mean, if somebody had a lot of red in their aura. That meant they were mighty angry, and meant you better avoid that person. I remember one time a neighbor came over to talk to me. I saw so much red in her aura. I said, "You just calm down. We'll talk about it later." She was upset about me, upset with me about something. I don't remember what that was. But that was one of the other strange abilities that I had. I also was able to see deceased people. You know, I guess you all have a movie where I say, "I see dead people." I guess that's what you call it nowadays. I could see folks that had crossed over. It started with my grandfather. I was very, very close with my granddaddy, and he had a horse riding accident. He actually drowned. A strange story. He was thrown from a horse. He hit his head on the lake, and he was unconscious and drowned in only probably a few inches of water. No one was there to help him. So the tradition in the South is that all the men of a family are part of preparing the body for the funeral, for the burial. And so I was part of that, even though I was a young boy. I knew my grandfather was dead. I knew there was no doubt that his body was no longer functional. Well, a few days after we buried him, just behind the barn, I saw him. Saw him just as healthy as ever. And I ran in to tell my mother that I had seen Granddaddy, and she said, "You know what? You must have second sight." That's what she called it. She said, "You must have second sight." And that's what we call it in the South, when you can see folks that are on the other side. Now, if my mother had told me, "You stop talking that nonsense," or if she had told me, "Oh, that's devil's work. Don't be doing something like that," I would have shut it down. I believe I would have been embarrassed. I would have felt I was bringing shame to the family. I would have shut that down. But since she took it so normal, she just said, "Oh, you must have second sight." It was something that stayed with me my whole life. I was just able to see folks that other folks couldn't see, that apparently were on.
Okay, folks, I'm going to come back right now. And Peter, I want to bring you in. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, all of it is just as nail-biting, making you want to just stay right wherever it is that you are, as those 10 minutes that you just heard. So we're going to try and come back and play a little bit more if we can. But Peter, I want for you to have an opportunity to answer a couple of questions and or statements that some folks have for you as well. But let me just first of all let you comment on that part, those almost 13 minutes that we heard of you, Peter Woodbury, as Edgar Casey, speaking to us from the perspective of what it is that Mr. Casey was all about, please.
Well, that's, it's always a little bit awkward to hear yourself perform.
Yeah.
But, that's just my attempt at trying to personify Edgar Casey and bring him into modern times as if he might share if we had been alive at the time when he was on the earth, and he might just mm-hmm. share kind of some of the stories of his life and kind of maybe inflecting some humor and
mm-hmm.
thoughtfulness and caring. Just mm-hmm. my hope is that I'm always trying to portray his spirit, that people get a sense
right.
Of the man's warmth and friendliness and demeanor.
Right, right, absolutely. And believe me, the first time that I heard this after you had sent it to me, I felt like the essence, the energy, the life form of Edgar Casey was here, just like I felt when I read the book by Jeff Stern. I felt mm-hmm. that presence, that power was not only with me, I felt that it was justifying, if you will, some of what I had felt and what I had seen as a child. And just as you said, for Mr. Casey there, had his mother said things differently to him, that, "Oh, no, you must be out of your ever-loving mind. did a horse kick you or something, so forth and so on, that he would not have continued in that way to do that. And so I think that those things are extremely important. And I could hear a shift in your tone, in your intonation, as you were doing that as well. And some of it might be theatrical, but I think the other part of it was actually quite spiritual. Let me go to Ms. Chandel, who had a question for you. Chandel, good evening. Thank you so much for being online with us and for taking these minutes from your busy day to stop by and visit us. What is your question, please?
My question was, where does the Edgar Casey end and the Mr. Woodbury begin?
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to put you back on hold for a moment, but I'll come back to you in just a minute and see if you have any further questions. The question is, where does Mr. Edgar Casey end and Peter Woodbury begin, or vice versa?
A lot of times people, they say or they believe that I'm channeling Edgar Casey, and then when I dig a little further, they say, there's no way Peter could be such an elegant, classy, smart man. So,
I love it.
But
so
how do you
answer her question?
Well, you know, I'm comfortable in who I am and in my personal story, and I have a tremendous amount of affection and caring for Mr. Casey, as he had for Jesus. And
mm-hmm.
so it's, you know, for me, he's like a contemporary, more contemporary version of that light trying to manifest
mm-hmm.
in the earth. And, of course, you know, I try my best in my own flawed way to be a light also. And you know,
mm-hmm.
and he was also able to admit, you know, he was far from perfect. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, just doing the best you can, trying not to repeat the same mistakes, you know, trying to make maybe some new ones.
Absolutely. Excellent. I like that a lot. We have another question from, looks like, Baltimore, Maryland, perhaps my dear friend Burnett. Good evening, Burnett. How are you?
I'm just grateful this evening that I picked up the phone to listen in. This was just so charming and delightful and intimate. What a gift.
Thank you.
What a gift. My question is whether or not this is a show that will be touring anywhere in the country. I'd love to invite you to the Baltimore, Washington area.
Yes, that's how I do it. People invite me, and I go and perform it. I'll be in Boca Raton with the performance in a couple of weeks, and I'm planning to do one here later in the year in Virginia Beach. But if you're interested and you have an audience, just contact me. You had my email, peter.woodbury@edgarcasey.org. Or you can Google me, Peter Woodbury, and I'd be happy to share Mr. Casey with you all.
Okay, wonderful. And just one more comment. Robert, the shows are getting better and better.
Oh, aren't you wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That's Reverend Burnett Lee Jones. She is minister and the leader, the spiritual leader of the One God, One Thought Center for Better Living in Baltimore, and a dear friend, and that will be a wonderful venue for you, Peter, to showcase this energy, because the folks there are like sponges, I assure you, and they will be so excited that you are coming, and we will make certain that we do everything to promote that program and whatever other programs that you also have to offer. Thank you, Reverend mm-hmm. Burnett. If you have any other questions, please hit one on your phone again, and I will come back to you. Peter, I'm going to ask you to stand by for just a moment. I want to remind our listening audience that this is The No Show on the Renford Broadcast Network. We are so happy that you decided to stop by here for a few minutes with us. We are here every Wednesday from 7 p.m. until 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. And we would love for you to share with your friends that they too can do as you have done, whether that is online, come up online with us through the link that I sent to you by email, or if that is by telephone, 347-838-9142. It is not too late for anyone to call in. We still have a few minutes left with this phenomenal gentleman who is showcasing how it is that he is showing up in the world and sharing the Edgar Cayce information and format and the ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment agenda, with whomever will listen. On Mondays, though, guys, we have the Cosmic Contact Show at 6:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, hosted by Pam Drennan in Seattle, Washington. We want for you to come back to the same number or the same address that you put in, and you can hear that show. On Tuesday, we have the Night Search Show at 9:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, hosted by Eddie Middleton from Memphis, Tennessee, and Justin Abner, who is also from Orlando, Florida. And it has been broadcast for more than 13 years. Isn't that something? On Wednesday, you already know that we have the No Show. And I've been here for 3 years, and we are excited to do the things that we are doing and to invite like-minded people, like people Peter Woodbury, to share information with you relative to the things that are going on. Immediately after this program at 8:30 p.m., there's the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program, hosted by my dear friend and the owner of this network, James Renford Powell, from Memphis, Tennessee. The program was created to provide the commentary on the support material sent each week for 54 weeks to those who publish the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. On Thursday, there's a Progressive News Weekly program at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, hosted by Daryl Clark and moderated and co-hosted by Cecil McDaniel, who is also the director of the Renford Broadcast Network and the Renford Broadcast Radio Network. The Searchers Roadmap Show is hosted on Thursdays as well at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time by Rhonda Harrison from Red Feathers Lakes, Colorado. The Searchers Roadmap was the first RBR show. Rhonda is a healer and often hosts shamans from around the world at her home 9,000 feet up the mountains of Colorado. So you can see we have phenomenal offerings for you, just like we are having tonight. And I am so excited about what we are doing tonight. Mr. Peter Woodbury, MSW, who received his undergraduate degree in psych from Harvard University and his master's from Boston University. And he, as you already know from having listened, is sharing the Edgar Cayce story with all of us. Peter, I want to come back to you for a moment. And would you tell us about the book, There is a River, Is It?, and who that's by? And I believe that all of these materials are available at ARE, are they not?
That's right, yes. There is a River is a biography that was written during Edgar Cayce's lifetime, and it was written by a close family friend named Thomas Segrew. He actually was Hugh Lynn Cayce's college roommate and became a lifelong friend and a friend of the family. And he, while he was convalescing from an illness, he lived with the Cayce's and would have talks with Mr. Cayce, and those talks eventually became that book, which is considered kind of a seminal book of a biography. There's many biographies, but There is a River is the first and considered in some ways the official biography of Edgar Cayce.
Excellent. You know, I believe in this thing called serendipity, synchronicity, and spirituality. I think that whenever it is, we always say in New Thought Metaphysics, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. and whether they recognize it at the time or not, but they will know that something is going on. And what was that catalyst for you, Peter Whitberry? What was it that made you say, this is the work that I want to do? This is how it is that I want to spend a lot of my time this particular lifetime.
I think it came, I found the, it came to, there is a river. I was already in my, I would say I must have been in my mid-30s. And so I had had a search, quite an extensive search in metaphysics and in religion and in spirituality. And so I think it was from that place that I, as I read Edgar Cayce, I saw that this was a thesis of a lot of what I had come to believe and understand, but it never really found under one kind of roof. So I think that that was really, the thing I was challenged with the most when I read There is a River was just the concept of reincarnation. I hadn't really wrestled with that. And so that took me some a little bit of work to kind of try to fit that into my own beliefs. But
you Catholics come around slowly sometimes.
That's true. That's very true. you don't realize how insidious these beliefs are, until you find yourself frustrated trying to.
Yeah, that's it.
Like a lot of things, I when I have a new idea, I try to think of, well, if this was to be true, what would it add? Why is reincarnation part of a lot of traditions? And that helped me. I think if we believe in God, we want to think of God as being fair, and just one lifetime at a time doesn't seem like it's very fair for some to be doing well and some to suffer. But the thought that we switch up, we have different opportunities, I found that plausible. And then the thought that, as a Catholic, I was taught that we have an eternal soul that lives on after death, but I didn't really talk about where does it go if it's eternal, and where is it before your birth. And so those were, helped me accept the possibility of reincarnation. And then all the way till I read Brian Weiss's books on past life and had a regression myself and felt pretty comfortable with what came through to me, and eventually studied past life regression. And so now I'm a past life regressionist, and also I teach the ARE's course, the annual course that they offer in past life regression. So
let's not pass over that too quickly, Peter, because a lot of people who are listening to us may not understand exactly what past life regression is and why one would want to do that, and the outcome from it. Would you address that? And before I forget, ladies and gentlemen, Peter will be back with us in June for part two, okay, for part two of this same opportunity that we're having this evening. On June 24th, we will have part two. But Peter, if you will, share with us the a definition of regression, why one would want to be regressed, and what the outcomes, the positive outcomes, have been for people, for some people.
Well, the premise, regression and hypnosis, hypnosis is used for all sorts of things, and hypnosis is just using the fact that the mind, between being awake and being asleep, the mind opens to suggestion. And with the belief in past life memory is that it's somehow stored in your subconscious or your soul mind. And so the first regressionist tried to use hypnosis to see if a person could actually go back and remember past lives. And so that's been, there's many well-documented cases of people using regression to be able to remember many past lives. And sometimes there's a healing quality that comes from it. A fellow came to me because he had a chronic hoarseness, kind of like Edgar Casey had with losing his voice.
Uh-huh.
And so he thought that since hypnosis had helped Edgar Casey, he wanted to try it himself. And so when he went under regression, he saw a man with a spear. At first, I wasn't sure if that was positive or not. But then the man kept showing up. I'd give him I'd make a suggestion to move somewhere else, and then the man showed up again. So it was telling me that his subconscious mind knew that he had to deal with this guy. And so I had him sit down and reflect on it. And he said that this is under trance. He said that in a past life this man had killed him with that spear. Mm. It speared him in the throat, and he had died with anger and fear, and that resentment had somehow lodged into his etheric body. And now he realized everything that had caused this death and everything that had come from it. And he said that he needed to relive this death and accept the spear in peace and in love. And so that's what he did. He went back to the moment of dying. He let go of any anger, resentment, or fear. And when he came out of the trance, his voice was normal, was fine, and he's been in touch with me. He hasn't had any recurrence of this hoarseness. That's just a little story of how subconscious mind and past life memory, and there's a lot that comes, you know. My work is with regression and past life memory, but also people have all sorts of different types of healing experiences under trance. You know, once they enter what I call the soul mind or the soul consciousness, you know, they can have encounters with deceased loved ones. They can have healing experiences. They can memories from this life can be recalled and be seen in different lights. Sometimes people enter spaces that are just of healing energies of different colors and lights. And my work is really to open these channels for people so that they can go there anytime they want, that they don't, you know, I don't give a post-hypnotic suggestion. And if you want more healing in this space, you have to come back and pay $19.99. I make the suggestion. So people come one time and they reach these states of consciousness, and then they're able to go back to them and in the experience. You know, it's the whole philosophy of Edgar Casey is self-empowerment. And so I'm trying to teach people how to do this themselves, and not just give them a fish, but teach them how to fish in their own soul mind.
That's right, and that is what is, in fact, required of us. Carrie Kelly is on the line with us, and she was just chomping at the bit. I could feel it in her energy field, in her aura. I'm in Little Rock, Arkansas. She's in Oakland, California, but I could feel it. You know, like your grandmother staring you down. She's behind you, and the back of your neck is just kind of starting to stand up. Miss Carrie, what question or comment do you have for our guest, Mr. Peter?
I am just wondering if he had any of those experiences himself that he portrays with the one-man show of Edgar Casey.
You know, I learned how to meditate when I was 17, and I've had meditative kind of reveries and different experiences have come forward, and knowings, but that's pretty much it. In my work, sometimes I feel that, you know, Edgar Casey said we're all psychic, and so sometimes when I'm very much desiring to be helpful and I put my own needs, my own ego aside, I pick up people's thoughts and I'm able to kind of be intuitive and have that kind of input, kind of guide the work that I do. My abilities or gifts, I think, are maybe what I've become aware of in the work that I do with hypnosis is that that we all have guides that are working with us. And as we volunteer to be helpful, these different guides, you can call them angels or guardian angels, they come into work. And so the work that I do with hypnosis, I can sense and I've felt and been told about just a group of guides that are part of the work that I'm doing, which is bringing the light of the soul into conscious manifestation. And then everybody brings their own guides. And so there's a collaboration that happens on this unseen dimension. And so I'd say, you know, maybe it's a little bit like what my great-grandmother did, which is kind of mediumship. I feel that I rest on the shoulders of a lot of unseen energies and souls that are you know, I'm on this side and they're on that side, and we're both trying to do the same thing, which is to try to bring in spiritual consciousness into manifestation here on the earth plane.
But you know, the challenge with that too, Peter, is that especially back during the days when your grandmother did it, and when my grandmother did it, and my uncles would say things, people did not look kindly upon that type of information, and they were afraid of it. So it took a lot of exuberance. It took a lot of courage for people to say things. And again, I say to you that what Mr. Casey's mother said to him was something that my grandmother would have said to me, but not necessarily my mother, you see. And this is even in the African American tradition, where we know spirits. We definitely are accustomed to being visited in that way, but it still was, up until of late, taboo. It was still hush-hush. So I applaud you for having that energy to do things in that way. Let's go back to Reverend Burnett for just one moment for a very, very, very quick statement or question, and then we're going to prepare to close out. And as we do so, I want to thank each and every one of you for being here with us today. You had choices. You didn't have to be here. You could have been 10,000 other places, but you decided to be here, and now you have seen the reward of your efforts, and so we are so grateful that you did. Let me come back to Reverend Burnett and just ask her. Reverend Burnett, was there another question or statement that you would like to share with our guest or make?
Well, I have a lot, and I'm going to be back on June the 24th for part two, where I can really have time to ask my questions. The question I did have was related to the healing work in past life regression. We have had people who came to the center and did some work on mental wellness and the use of past life regression to help people with mental challenges to get to the root of what is really going on with them when the medical model did not work, and when some of the other things they have tried, the, you know, pharmaceuticals did not work. And so what we suggested was, you know, the hypnosis and past life work, and have heard some stories about it really being effective with people. So I wanted to ask about the use of that in his work. But I'll come back on June 24th.
Okay. We're going to actually save that one for part two, guys. You know, there's always somebody that throws something out and then makes you come back for it. So we're going to let you answer that question during part two, Peter. That will give all of us something in addition to look forward to. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The No Show. I thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedules to stop by and visit with us. Most of all, I want to thank Peter Woodbury, who is associated and affiliated with the ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Look it up and come back again to the show to hear anything and everything that you want to know. Peter, thank you so much for taking time from your schedule, my friend. I appreciate you, and I look forward to us doing this and many other things many times in the future. Take care, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
This is The No Show. We'll see you. Have a great day. God bless. We're out of here. Bye-bye.